Everybody, this is self-isolating Lola. I'm hunkered down in a bunker somewhere in Jacksonville, Florida. Won't tell anyone where for everyone else's safety because I might have been exposed.
Doing the bunker hunker.
I am doing the bunker hunker, but I got beer and crackers, so I'm okay.
Well, I was definitely exposed, but Cybernaut saved me from being arrested in San Diego.
All right. Now, I'm excited to hear about this. All right. Before we get into that, I'll introduce Linda. How are you doing?
I am exhausted.
Yeah, I bet you are. Much.
I'm exhausted, but I am so happy to be back at my normal little schedule, at my normal little desk, you know, doing my normal little thing.
Yep. Yeah. You have, you know, everything you know around you.
Yeah. Yep.
But you don't have fish tacos.
Now I'm sad.
Well, no one has fish tacos unless they deliver. But before we get into anything, we are also here with my wonderful friend Cybernaut. Cy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a great week, actually.
Yeah, you got to meet. Oh my gosh. That makes two sets of scanner drones who have met in person. That's awesome. Yeah.
And we just need to close the loop and get the buyer in. But, you know, the buyer's elusive, like, you know, the virus.
I think we,
He's within the Comcast system.
He hit the top level diamond and, you know, he had to cut off ties with everyone in his past.
Yep. Yeah.
I think that's what happened.
We need an Elliot type to go find him.
It would take an Elliot type.
See, I played Elliot this week and I did not do well at it, I gotta say.
Oh,
with the hard drive and everything.
Yeah, so I'm pretty much we had a person in our group that was out playing tennis with his friend. His tennis partner took a racket to the face.
Oh dear.
They ended up going to the emergency room, and while they were at the emergency room, a case of coronavirus was confirmed.
Uh-oh.
So they told everybody in the emergency room, go home, stay there for 2 weeks, don't come back. Just stay in your house for 2 weeks. And I guess it was enough that our division head said, you know what? If you don't have to be here in the lab, if you don't have animals you have to take care of, if you're not running an experiment actively, go home, stay home, work from home, do your research there. If you have to come in, there's a schedule here. Schedule it so that either you're the only one in the lab or you're in a part of the lab where nobody else is. And that's how everything's being worked now. So we only go in when we have to go in. We try to minimize our maximize our social distance with other human beings. And pretty much the rest of the campus is that way now. Students will not be returning. Everything's going to be done online. Cameras and microphones are flying off the shelves. It was incredible. And of course, since, you know, we're all doing this, you know, I'm planning, you know, to work from home on Monday. I get home 4 o'clock Friday night, literally like between four and 4:10. My hard drive dies. In my home computer.
Dang.
And it took me at least 24 hours before I could finally find another drive I could replace it with. I thought I had some here, but I got to tell you, you know, when you're in IT, you tend to collect a lot of cruft. And I went through 4 different hard drives that I thought were good drives, but they are not.
I got a lot of hard drives.
Need a new stash, man. You need a new
stash. I do. I need to. Do some inventory.
Yep.
But I did manage to get Windblows reinstalled because, sadly, that's the operating system I'm forced to work in. I can now work from home. That was kind of a pain in the butt.
Windows had an update last night, and they opened up Edge without even me asking, and now it's different. And I had a hard time getting out of it. I had a hard time opening Opera and Google Chrome. I was not happy.
Oh, you guys are going to be so mad. Yesterday, I had an update. It took me 20 seconds, and all of a sudden, everything worked really much better.
I know.
Linux. Next Friday, I have another update, and I get new stuff. It's great.
Well, I kind of, the whole time I was trying to like troubleshoot my way through what was wrong with my computer and fix it. You know, I've got, you know, my little box of thumb drives that have, you know, Ubuntu and the Windows PE tools and all that stuff. I'm like all working. I'm working the problem. I kind of felt like Elliot at that moment,
that right? Where cool. I was just like, you know, were your fingers flying over the keyboard?
Yeah, well, I was doing some kind of hackery things, trying to get things to work. And unfortunately, Elliot got a little too uppity with one of the drives. I had a drive, and I could see the partitions, and it was like a 4-terabyte drive, and there was two partitions on it. And I tried to install Windows to it, and Windows said, I can't delete that partition. I'm like, okay, that must have come out of Sunbox. It's got that funky GPT nonsense going on with the partition. So I'll just go in and I'll just like DD the drive. I'm just going to write zeros across the entire drive, wipe everything out on it. So I did that. I booted off my Ubuntu stick and I did that. I DD'd the drive, but Elliot was not paying attention to his drive letters. Instead of writing to SDA, I wrote to SDB. Whoa. And I completely wiped out my Ubuntu boot stick.
That's a tragedy, Elliot was feeling
kind of bad.
That is pretty close to a sin if you don't have a way to get Ubuntu on another driver. You don't have another Linux.
No, I do. I have my Jetson Nano. I've got at least a half dozen Raspberry Pis laying around, all with Raspbian on them. Internet connected. Yeah, I'm able. Yeah, I'll survive the apocalypse, at least in ones and zeros. Yeah. I won't have any eggs, but I'll have all my ones and zeros that I need. So,
and that's important, man.
The end of the world will come when we no longer have access to Linux distros.
I'll always have access to Linux distros. I guarantee you that I've got at least 4 or 5 Red Hat installs of like version 5 something laying about in a box somewhere. I'll find them if I need them. They'll still work too.
And I've got an old computer in the garage. I've got this laptop. I've got my desktop. I've got 2 Kindles.
Yeah, I didn't even need to use the basement computer. Like, I have a computer in the basement that runs Linux. It kind of runs stuff in my house. Mm-hmm. I didn't even need to like log into that, but it was an option if I needed it. And then I also have the bedroom computer. I have a Linux distro in my bedroom for watching movies on the TV.
All right, you are set up.
Yeah, until there's an EMP, and then I'm screwed.
Well, and that's what happened in World of Worlds, but I'm not ready to talk about that yet. We're
living in War of the Worlds, except we're the aliens.
Well, the funny thing is, you know, I rewatched Contagion last night, which their disease was way worse than what we're dealing with right now. Way worse. I mean, you just die.
Okay, Contagion right now is the number 2 movie being watched.
Not surprised.
Across the planet.
One of my favorite movies. You know, I love disaster movies. I love that movie, but I've forgotten how brutal it was. I had a hard time with the little boy. That was rough. But it's a good movie. Who here has seen it?
I've seen it. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely seen it. Definitely up on the wife's go-to list. I've seen it at least a couple of times.
Poor Kate Winslet. I'm like, no, she didn't even make it halfway through the movie, I don't think.
Well, speaking of Linux, I did have a very good time at Southern California Linux Expo.
Tell us about it.
We had, it was a bit, I hate to say this, scaled it down.
Yeah. A few people pulled out.
There were some people who were told they couldn't go. Totally understand. We're very sorry we didn't see you there. It was my first time there, but it was really fun in that I got to sit down and basically ask people what their product did, because I don't know a whole lot of these big commercial entities. So, you know, basically I'd walk up to a booth and go, so what exactly does your product do?
And why do I have to have it?
And the entire time, because I was there as a writer, you know, I was gaining sci-fi ideas from all of these companies. And there were companies, you know, from SaltStack to Boreos, Gnome, Soft Iron, Lutris. I love Lutris, and they let me play all my games. Privacy ID3A. There are just so many tons of people that had so many different big projects going. There are people with storage solutions that scaled up in my world could provide a storage solution to store people from an entire planet. And that was my thing when I came across a storage person. So how many of these would I have to say store an entire planet's information on? And I'd get a blank look. Why would you want to do that?
ZFS will do it.
Yeah, there are a bunch of different hardware that, you know, would be able to actually scale up that way. Yay, scale.
I know. I'm learning how to do it because Jason was always in control.
It's cute. Thank we're you. There at the bottom. The one overarching thing I've learned is that the problems that are out there, all the things we haven't done are still not solved. Mm-hmm. So if you're a sci-fi writer, you know, don't feel hopeless that there isn't a place for you, because there are still so many things that need solutions, and you could come up with the next great idea from your marvelous, gigantic human brain.
And there's a lot of people working on those solutions, though, too. That's the other side of it, right? There's
but that's wonderful.
The research is
all
phenomenal.
The research out there. Yeah, absolutely. So you can get so many ideas, and then when the problem is solved, you know, you can write about that too.
And I know you were when you and Chair were down here, you were talking about Kubernetes and how that sounded so like prevalent and big at scale.
It was every second booth was Kubernetes.
Yeah. And
I still don't understand it completely. I'm still looking into what all it does and how all these different companies are using it.
Well, I don't know how I don't know how many people are using it. I know how I have to use it, and I know how it's beneficial to me. And I got to say, it's as though, Imagine. Okay, so we're in the times of the coronavirus, we've got the update after 46 years to Oregon Trail, and we now have our coronavirus update for Oregon Trail, and we want to run that on our, you know, i7, you know, Windows 10 PC. How do we do that when, you know, originally that software was written for an i386 or a 286, actually, probably. It comes, basically, you build a container for it. So you build a container that runs a operating system from that era that emulates the hardware, just like a virtual machine of sorts. And you run that container within something called Docker, and Kubernetes is just a way to do that at scale. So Kubernetes will take a pool of resources, your GPU, CPU, memory, disk, all that stuff is in a pool of resources over multiple machines. And you'll submit your image of Oregon Trail that you want to run to the Kubernetes cluster, and it will decide where's the best place I can run this and the most efficient place to run it. And it will find a little section within its cluster, and it will run it and give you a prompt or a display or whatever to be able to, you know, run your Oregon Trail simulation. So that's kind of Kubernetes in a nutshell. It's just a way to horizontally scale Docker, and Docker is a way to vertically scale. Is it vertical? Might be horizontal. I have to think about that. But it's a way to scale containers, which are really just virtual machines. So I mean, if you're at all familiar with VMware, it's very similar. You're running.
Okay. Literally.
It's Inception.
Literally, indie filmmakers, right here is your next great movie idea. Just please name it Kubernetes.
It's we're like 9 times out of 10 when you go to a website, it's not running on a physical piece.
Yeah.
It's not directly running on a physical piece of hardware. It's running in a container, or it's running in a VM. We moved away from that like 5 years ago.
When I went to New Horizons and took the cybersecurity course, and I still haven't taken the test yet, but whatever. When I took the cybersecurity course, all of the computers were virtual machines run from one big machine.
Yeah, that makes sense in today's world.
How different is that from having a domain where you control a lot on the domain? That's not quite the same, is it?
Domains are really in the realm of DNS, which is just a name. I mean, it's an abstraction. So typically when I think of a domain, you've got, you know, Scanadrome dot, are we org?
No, we're .com.
So you got Scanadrome.com, but that equates to an IP address. And that IP address can be, you know, on Amazon. It could be in who knows where, somewhere on the planet. But there's, you know, a server running that, or a container running that at that IP address. And it's just the domain is just points to an IP.
A virtual environment doesn't do this quite the same thing. It's more like we're saying it's here, but it's not really here. It's here for now.
I mean, like, our computers at work, it runs on one domain, and it's on my computer because I download stuff to my documents and my documents are there and stuff. But at the same time, the IT people can go in the domain and do stuff.
Yeah, that's a Active Directory domain, which is it's essentially an LDAP tree. The LDAP is the open source implementation of that Microsoft may or may not have stolen and called it Active Directory. But a domain in that sense is just a tree of trust. Mm-hmm. So a domain in that sense is a tree. And you have nodes in the tree, which are like leaves, and you've got branches, which are like networks. Mm-hmm. And your Active Directory, your domain, is the sphere with which in you trust all the things that are connected to you, right? Kind of like that.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, the last thing I saw at scale, and I have to say thank you to Reverse Shell Corporation, is I got the chance to get my hands on a Pine 64 Braveheart model of their brand new phone.
Cool.
and it's actually pretty nice. It's a little bigger than my Pixel, and it's got a removable battery.
That's important to me. I need a removable battery.
I'm just gonna say, Linda, you should be a little weary on that, because I noticed that, you know, the gleam in Che's eye when he was talking about the pine. She's sexy.
Yeah. Okay? Yeah, it actually is. Saying. It is, although it's a little bigger than the Pixel, it's very sleek. It's very good looking. And I think this, if it continues on, it could be the next big thing, because it's affordable.
How much does it cost?
Oh, God. What were they putting the Braveheart model up for, Che? Was it three? It's in the realm of hundreds rather than thousands.
Yeah, and it's open source.
I know, that's good.
Oh, a PinePhone will come in at a grand total of $150.
That's not bad.
$150 for, you know, something that can run. It does. The Braveheart model obviously has issues, but not only are the company themselves solving these issues, but because it's open source, other people there at scale were taking turns figuring out bugs. They were taking their individual piece of equipment. Oh, I got this piece of equipment, and, you know, I got these cables, and let's hook it up and let's see. Oh, well, that's a bug. That's definitely a bug. And they were solving these problems together.
That's very exciting.
It's not all on Pine 64 to do it all themselves.
Right. And it's not, you know, the customer isn't left going, it just doesn't work. It'll probably never get fixed.
Yeah. And, you know, either shipping it back for a refund or, goodness forbid, just tossing it in the trash.
Another brick.
Yeah. If I'm probably the only one here that has had this experience, but if you've ever been out on GitHub and used a piece of open source software, found a bug in it, and for whatever reason, you know what the bug is and you know how to fix it, you can literally just write up, you know, it depends on the project. Some projects really want you to just submit your own code. Other projects will be like, okay, well, tell us what's wrong and we'll try and fix it. Mm-hmm. But either way, both of those paths will lead you to a fix for the particular problem that you have, because not always will you have the developer of the software have access to the particular hardware or the particular circumstance or, you know, a variety of things you're throwing at their software. It's a really good solution, whereas, you know, these closed source systems like Windows and Mac, they try to just carpet bomb the landscape with, you know, what's going to buy us most bang for the buck, who's going to have the most enjoyable experience, mm-hmm. you know, for the masses, and then screw you guys out on the fringes that want the, you know, I want to be able to tweak this thing.
Yeah, no specialty service when it comes to Windows and Mac.
No. If you called a Microsoft right now and said, I want a little button right here that does this thing, they would be like, screw you. You're the only person that wants this, and we're not gonna spend, you know, development time with all these engineers here to make that come to realization, unless you can get, you know, a half million people on board with it, then maybe we'll look at putting a little.
Or get one person to tweet it who has a lot of influence. You know?
Well, that was scale in a nutshell. And it was really exciting for me. But just as fun was spending time with Cybernaut.
Oh, see, now you stole my segue, because I was going to say what was even more fun was when Linda came to San Diego. Oh, my God. That was the best part of my week, I got to tell you. Only was I not at work, but I got to spend time with some great friends.
It was fantastic because
we drank a lot of beer.
A lot of good beer.
Oh, a lot of great beer.
One very bad
beer. Oh, yes.
Only one. It was.
Wait, bad like da 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 da, not bad to the bone.
No. This was bad as in wah wah wah.
Oh, was that
that the watermelon
ballast point? I don't like to call out flawed beers. I'm gonna refrain.
And the really good one, the best one that I think I had was the BA grape wine.
You're so wrong.
Delicious. Uh-oh.
No, the best one you had was the one you mailed to me, and I kept it in my cellar.
He kept until the you 18, got here. 18%.
Yeah, I was a bad boy. Woo. And no hangover, surprisingly.
And it was even better. It was even better than when I tried it a year ago.
Kind of makes you wish you'd hung on to it instead of sending it to me, right?
Yeah. Well, so keep an eye out. I got to record an intro. Che did a video of not just the beer, but the food that we had. And I just had to record an intro, and that should be up pretty soon.
Oh, you can... I still have the bottle and I can still, it's smoky. Like I can smell it. It's still smoky. Spigot Liquor and from Flattail Brewing.
Oh yeah. Yeah. From Flattail. Joel Ray from Corvallis Brewing Supply in association with Flattail Brewing. They brewed it at Flattail.
Yeah. And I still have the bottle. I have not washed it out. Thank God. I still smell oranges and I still get like this almost like a, it's not really, it's kind of like a hickory smoke.
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, I was supposed to put that on there.
It was so good. So good. Oh, there you are. Surprise.
We got to visit the surprise. It was awesome. This is the ship used in Master and Commander.
That's so awesome.
And it actually did sail until I think it was 2007. They're redoing the deck right now. And we got two actual nails from the original ship.
That is totally cool.
Now they're using stainless steel screws to put the planking instead of nails. So we got that. And it was, I mean, this obviously wasn't, you know, like an 1800s ship, but it was made as a prop, but it's wonderful because you get to be in the places, you know, it's to size. I can't imagine that many people spending time on a ship of that size, but yeah, it's realistic.
It's a lot smaller than the Midway.
Yeah.
Which we also toured.
We also toured. Yes.
And to my surprise, I knew the Midway was big, and I knew that, you know, everybody that has toured it has been like, oh, it's like a 3-4 maybe 5 hour experience. We went there and it was like 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we were still on ship when my phone went off and said, it's time to go home, which I have an alarm set every day at 3 o'clock in the afternoon that reminds me I need to stop working and get the hell out of here.
Yeah, I'm different. I'm looking at the clock. I know exactly when it's time for me to go home.
Oh no, I get sucked down rabbit holes and monkey holes and just fall into it. And so I need the alarm. And we were still on the damn ship. And it was like, that was like four and a half hours later.
That's pretty cool.
Looking back, it didn't seem like it was that big. I mean, it was ginormous, but it
was, you know, you got to spend time touching the planes
and talking to the docents.
Yeah.
The docents there were awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
A lot of them are, you know, a lot of them are vets themselves.
Yep.
A few of them are like super vet status.
Yes, they are.
World War II super vet status.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, that was an amazing tour. And then the other one that I just could not take enough pictures of. And
A Russian sub.
Ooh, was it like there on reconnaissance?
This was the sub that could have started World War III.
Uh-oh.
During the Bay of Pigs, the whole Cuban Missile Crisis. Yeah. There was a sub that had a nuclear capable sub that almost started World War III, but if it weren't for the cooler heads of a couple of the Soviet commanders, we would be living in a different world now. We'd still be dealing with the coronavirus, but we'd all be living in a different world now.
Yep.
Definitely.
And that also was featured in a movie, I believe, called Phantom with David Duchovny.
Oh, I don't remember that.
I have not seen it yet. I haven't seen it either. I've got it in my queue. You have to buy it, but it's in my queue to buy. And I'm definitely going to be watching it because what a great setting. They filmed a fair portion of the movie actually at the Maritime Museum. So there's like some of the boat scenes are on some of the boats that are like there at the Maritime Museum, and all of the sub scenes were on that Russian sub. And what a cool sub it was. Like there was it 65, 60, 63.
63 people on that sub at one time. And I didn't count more than 20 bunks at one time.
Yeah, and there was like when we were going through, there were like maybe like they tell you there should be no more than 15 people on the sub at a doing the tour at a time, and it felt crowded. It already felt crowded.
Oh yeah.
And that toilet. The toilet. Oh my God, the toilet.
What's going on with the toilet?
Like you have to bend over to use the toilet.
You almost have to back in.
It's yeah.
It's so no, hard to turn to around in. In the space. And it's like, it's tucked into like whatever corner they could find. It seemed like an afterthought. Like,
oh yeah.
Oh my God. You know, we better include a toilet on this thing. Where are we going to put it? Oh, here's a tiny corner we haven't used yet.
Yeah, here's some pipes and wires they can sit under. Like literally right under.
Crouch under the wires to get in there, and then your left knee is like hitting the sink, and
it's like what I was talking about with being on an airplane and using their bathroom. Mm-hmm. Although this has a little work,
yeah.
Like, only one toilet for everybody.
There were two, but the door was closed on the second one, and that was even worse. That was like back in the engine compartment.
Yeah.
So the front one was for everybody at the front, and the engine compartment was like for everybody else.
Wow, that's messed up. Could you imagine like hearing and feeling the engine and you're like,
But there's the cool thing. Like when I stepped on board the Midway, obviously the Russian sub didn't have any machinery, but when I stepped on board the Midway, I could feel the rumble under my feet, the rumbling hum, and it felt familiar because I've been on a Boxer.
Mm-hmm. That is so freaky.
That was actually kind of a moment I didn't expect myself. So I've never toured the Midway, and stepping onto the Midway, there was a familiarity. Like when you step onto a ship, the ship's kind of alive, and underneath you feel that vibration, that movement. It just kind of vibrates up through your body. And then you kind of, at some point you could like, you notice it. And then after a little while you forget about it. It just kind of
becomes a part of your, you.
Yeah. Becomes a part of your environment. But then when you get out on dry land, you're like, wow, this feels weird. Why is the floor not moving? Why is it not vibrating?
Again.
Yeah.
So yes. For everybody, for everybody who has ever watched Star Trek and thought, you know, wow, they really treat the ship like it's another person, like it's alive. It is. It's true. Like you get that sense, like the ship has kind of a voice and it's talking to you. You know, it's telling you whether, you know, whether it's okay and whether, you know, it needs something. And, you know, it's weird. Well, you just get that sense from it.
And you get like a caretaker feeling, I would imagine, because you have to make sure she's okay. You have to baby her because she is your ride. That's how you're getting everywhere.
Yeah, it's like when I drive my car over to the mechanic and I go, you know what? It's making a clickety clack thing. And then I also, like in the back side of my ass, I feel this little thump.
A little tickly thing. And, then, and it feels good. And I'm like, yeah. I want some more.
And the mechanic is like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, look, I've had this car for like 15 years now. I know when it ain't right, and it ain't right.
I know,
buddy,
I know. I understand the Midway, you know, didn't actually see the action, but I had just finished watching Midway, the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I haven't seen that yet.
So I felt, it felt like I was just walking onto a piece of history. You know, I could, in my head again, I saw the battles that occurred from Pearl Harbor all the way through Midway.
Cool.
Oh, and for me, when we got to the operations center, right, where they're looking at the radar and they're identifying friend or foe, whatever, all that equipment. So they had like a couple different phases of equipment that they had within that room. And I was just like, oh my God. Yeah, that's the thing that I love about military equipment. You can have something that was made in 1950, but still in service because it just works phenomenally.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. And so I've got a bazillion pictures, both of that and the Russian sub, where, you know, those command and control modules, there's something to be said about the military build. It's very specific. I mean, it's exacting in its design. Mm-hmm. It's simple. It's exact, and it works.
And it just works, which is what we all
want. Yeah.
It was all in all.
You have so many people taking care of it too. I mean, I've learned enough from my friends that were in the military that, you know, every piece of equipment is well taken care of. Everyone learns how to take care of it and document it. And
there's a system we called the 3M system, and the 3M system laid out every single little bit of maintenance you had to do every hour of every day.
Yeah. Shine that brass.
Check the magazine temperatures 3 times a day, check the steam system, and some people have to overlap with other departments to help do the job. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, because I happened to be in the area, I had to help check the steam system, and I'd report that information to a different department saying, hey, everything's okay.
Yep, everyone has to work together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All in all, it was a fantastic trip. I thoroughly enjoyed being around Cybernaut because he was interesting and fun, and
you two were a bunch of troublemakers.
Well, you know the Irish like to fight.
I just wanted to feed him. That was feed him and beer him up.
The food. Yeah, we got home. We're still craving food.
No, I see an Innova in your future, or a Jewel, one of the two. They're definitely going to be on the sous vide path, not long from now.
Cool.
I still have one backpack of sous vide beef from Linda's trip over here.
We're back on the pork sirloin on the grill.
Yeah. You know, I did grill for years and years, but then I kind of graduated because, you know, I can do double, triple, quadruple, you know, in the little water bath and then chuck it in the fridge and then just unzip it and eat it when I want it.
Yeah. Yep.
I have no idea what any of that meant.
Sous vide is cooking in a water bath. It's actually a wonderful way to cook.
Okay. That steak is okay. Going out on a limb here. Call me out. Call you because I can't reach you. You're back up there in Oregon. I can't like the arm doesn't reach that far. Tell me, that tri-tip, was that not the best? Was it the best tri-tip or was it the best tri-tip ever?
It was the best tri-tip ever.
Yeah. You can't screw it up.
It's like cooked perfectly.
You can't. That's the great thing. You can't screw it up. Yeah. That's the best thing about it. I can't screw it up. I love things where I can't screw it up because if given an opportunity, I will screw it up.
Well, I have one more picture to share.
Uh-oh. Is this the Che thing?
Uh-oh. No, no, no. No, I'm not sharing that one. It has you in it. This is my sci-fi moment from the Midway Museum.
Oh my goodness. Oh,
yeah, the
and a millipede.
That is a very centipede thing. I'm not sure how I feel about that.
It's a narwhal.
It's a narwhal, a seal, and a Linux penguin.
Penguin, yeah.
And yet somehow they make it work.
Yeah, well, you know.
There's a place for everybody.
Yeah.
It's a thruple.
A thruple.
As long as they're open and communicate well, it'll work.
A thruple of sea creatures. two mammals and a bird.
Did I see that YouTube video like 10, 15 years ago?
Two mammals, one bird, yeah.
Two mammals, one bird. They passed the bird around and squawk, squawk, squawk.
Yeah. Sorry.
Anywho's, so what about this coronavirus thing? What's up?
I'm technically we're in the restriction zone because we visited San Diego, so I don't want to take a chance. I don't have a temperature, haven't gotten a temperature yet, but I'm going to avoid my lovely elderly neighbor just in case. Had to go outside today to get some stuff. But yesterday I ordered through Instacart. And Instacart is actually pretty awesome for groceries.
Instacart.
It was actually pretty awesome for groceries. I got to talk to the shopper as she was shopping.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. They usually will text back and forth.
Yeah. No, I asked them to get toilet paper. And I said, I don't care what kind of toilet paper. She said, oh, I'm so sorry. They are completely out.
Which is insane.
I was like, that's okay. That's why, oh, well.
I got paper towels, I guess. So one of the things about me is when I was in my early 20s, I got really sick twice. I mean, like months sick and high fevers and everything. And ever since then, except for a cold every once in a while, I don't get sick like that. I just don't, which is awesome. But I do worry that I could be a carrier and just not really showing it. Because sometimes, like, when everyone else is like, oh, I got the flu, I feel horrible. Like, I'll have a few days where my throat feels tight and maybe I cough a little bit. And I always wonder, I'm like, is that my version of the flu? So right now, today I've been coughing. I had a headache. My throat has been tight for the last few days. So I can't help but wonder, could I be a carrier? And I was at the Navy base yesterday, and I heard everyone talking about coronavirus, and I was like, what's going on? They're like, there's a confirmed case here at the Navy base. So,
Yeah.
So I haven't been out today, and I won't go out tomorrow.
Well, you're stuck for 2 weeks.
I don't know what to do. I mean, they're at work. They're like, well, we're not set up to telework, and I don't know. We're going to see. You'll hit the car emergency line. I don't know. No. What do I do?
Yeah, just call the emergency line, I guess.
Well, I was with my supervisor and another coworker, so they have to be quarantined too then. I don't know. No one is saying anything. I don't know what to do.
See, somebody needs to just make a decision. Somebody needs to make a decision.
I'll be happy to stay at home and work. That's like my dream.
That's ridiculous that they're not set up to telework. How difficult could it be to set up a way to hook into the telephone system?
Because we're contractors. I guess we're not trusted enough to bring our work home.
They should just chunk it. Chunk the 2 weeks. Everybody let everybody suffer.
Yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I really don't know. And it's not like they're going to tell me to stay home. I mean, I'll say, look, I was at the base. There's a confirmed case there. But probably if I'm not showing symptoms, I don't know if anyone's going to want me to stay home. I just don't know.
Well, yeah, you don't. Well, I mean, if they put you in isolation, they got to let you be in isolation for at least 2 weeks.
I'll ask them.
From the time of exposure. So, you know.
I'll ask them. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, I don't have symptoms except for coughing a little bit and a tight throat. But, I mean, there are plenty of people who are carriers and don't show symptoms. That's one of the things with this virus.
Well, I mean, it's like a common cold, and then it could mutate. But right now, it's really nothing to be, you know, enormously alarmed about, as long as you take reasonable precautions.
Yeah.
I mean, So I have the normal con crud, but yeah, I don't have a temperature.
Okay.
So I'm not that worried and just going to stay home, you know, putter around, wash my hands, try not to touch my face, which is almost impossible for me.
It is very hard not to touch your face.
Because every third second, I just have to facepalm at the way the world is going. Guess what people are panic buying here?
Toilet paper.
Well, that is one thing. The other thing is bird seed.
That makes no sense. What's up with that?
Yeah, like all the big bags of bird seed. People came in and started panic buying all the big bags of bird seed. It is, I have no idea. I have no idea. It's like they saw there's no toilet paper left. We have to panic buy something. Forget the cereal. We don't like any of the cereal. We won't panic buy that. No, we'll just go for the bird seed.
The birds will be okay. They knew how to eat before we started buying bird seed.
Oh, absolutely. They will be just fine without me.
That makes no sense. That's like the oddest thing. Unless there's a use that we don't know about.
They've got to put come on. That has got to go in the movie that they're obviously going to make about this, right?
Yeah.
The COVID-19 movie must include the panic buying of bird seed. Just to be interesting.
And maybe they could figure out why people are doing it. Are they stuffing their bras? Are they all going out and doing drag shows? Because that is one of the things that people use if they're, you know, dressing in female drag.
Oh, I never thought of that.
It's very realistic. If you feel it, it kind of smushes like a breast would.
Oh, hey, there we go. So guys are, you know, filling up bras in order to get out of the state controlled isolation, right?
I don't know.
That obviously has to go in the movie. There has to be like state controlled isolation centers, and people are dressing up like women, and that's why they're panic buying bird seed to stuff bras so they can look like women to get out of the isolation centers.
Well, they're trying to hide their identity.
Yes.
Well,
because they would come up in a database of coronavirus sufferers, huh?
We didn't make it up to the Asian market.
No, we didn't. I saw a bunch of Asian markets on the way up. Yeah. But I was too tired on the way home to go.
the whole strip north of my house is all like Asian markets, Asian cuisine, that sort of thing.
Well, and, I'm just gonna have to come back. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm sorry. Okay. I think we have room in the house, and I'm sure I can schedule that Airbnb for, you know, another trip.
Maybe when I release my book, I could release it in San Diego first.
But the Asian market we normally go to, as far back as 2 weeks ago, maybe a week ago. No, 2 weeks ago. It was 2 weeks ago before you got here. They had easily a ton of rice, a ton. Yeah. I'm talking like an actual ton of rice. Yeah. We're talking 50-pound bags, 25-pound bags, hundreds of them. They're lined up at the front of the store. We walked in there one day and it was completely freaking empty. Just gone. Just all gone.
Okay. And that's the one thing they're not touching here. Rice. It's all over the place. Really? What? Oh, yeah. It's like nobody thinks about rice. No, it's all the flour. Okay, so nobody here actually makes bread on a regular basis. Normally, you walk in the stores, right? There's bags of flour everywhere. No, now everybody decides, oh, no, I better get flour just in case I have to make bread.
What? Yeah, well.
Even if you've never made bread in your whole life, and now you got to panic buy flour to make bread.
I don't panic buy flour, but I do actually have like maybe 15 pounds of flour on hand at any given time.
Well, it would have been, yeah, exactly. It would have been nice to pick up a bag of flour today, but
yeah, because you know, you want to make some pizza.
I have enough flour for one batch of Cybernaut dough. Cybernautastic dough.
You can, you know what? If I don't do it right after the podcast, remind me. I have a spreadsheet that I'm using. I'm currently using to calculate all the little bits and pieces numbers of Cybernaut dough. And that's, I mean, I like, yeah, you asked me for the recipe and there was a Cybernaut bread. There totally is. The numbers that I have, I got a minimum, I got a maximum of what, pizzaioles across the world have all said, this makes good dough. And I put it in a spreadsheet and then I tweak those numbers to get, you know, what I think is the best thing for my oven, my times, my temperatures, you know, that sort of thing. And that's how I go about making my pizza.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, that dough is awesome.
Jay shared the toilet photo with me.
You want to share it for everybody? Yeah.
Here we go. There we go. That is
so unsanitary.
Yeah. Well, you know, you really got to bend the hell over.
You really do.
Sitting up. No, there's no.
No, there's no. No, because if I sat up just a little bit, my head would be slamming into those wires right behind me.
Yeah.
It looks like a mop closet.
They even cut a few wires out of that space.
Oh,
they probably did, yeah. Yeah,
there's another tube right next to the red handle that used to be there that would have, you know, like really kind of you would have smushed into your left arm. Mm-hmm. It's very tiny.
Can you imagine? And that's what they had to use for a toilet every day.
Yep.
That is horrible.
I can't even imagine getting into the shower space. The only shower space. Okay, the enlisted people didn't have shower space. Like the officers had a shower space.
What did the enlisted people do?
They may do.
A scrubbing like sponge?
Ew! That must have stank.
Probably. In that tiny little sub? Yeah.
Yeah, that's just a big... Yeah, that's just a big coronavirus tube.
I know.
I know it is.
They all died of infections. That's horrible.
Most of the submariners that I've known will tell you that, you know, when they take on supplies, they load the, like, you get a bunch of canned goods, you know, canned tomatoes, canned onions, canned this, canned that. Mm-hmm. You just line the floor with it. So, like, as you're walking down the aisleways, you're actually walking on top of your dinner.
That's weird. Yeah.
And you just eat your way down. That's what you do, because.
Well, I was, good thing I was warned when I went on Westpac. I was warned. They said you're gonna run out of stuff. So your favorite things, you need to pack your locker and pack any personal space you have with your favorite stuff.
Wow.
So not only did I pack my. I packed my space with like the Lipton's, the little Lipton's instant soup packets.
I used to eat those a lot.
Yeah.
I also put things I could sell.
Oh, I didn't realize that was encouraged.
It was a non-smoking ship.
Oh.
Yeah, like 30 seconds after we left port, the captain came on board and said, "This is now a non-smoking ship. No more smoking."
A lot of people panic.
Yeah, I had already put cans of chew in my...
Panic smoking.
So, you know, so, and yeah, people came to me.
I bet you were the
people came to me. I was the place to go after.
They were whispering your name.
And not only did I do that, I ordered a sea bag full of replacements to be sent to me on the ship.
You could do that?
There was a company specifically for that. You filled out the order and you paid for it in advance, and they would send you, as you know, you could fill up a whole sea bag and they'd send you a sea bag with all that stuff in it.
I didn't know that. Okay. And it would come to the ship?
Mail call.
Yep.
I didn't know that. That's good to know.
Tepler, Linda, you have a package.
A very big package. And, you know, because we were in the hot zone, I obviously had to open it in front of security.
Yeah, they wouldn't let you just be sneaking in anything.
Yeah, and then they had the beagle sniff it first. The beagle sniffed it. And then I had to open it in front of everybody and show, you know, it's just, you know, soup and coffee. And
then everybody knows where to go to get it, right?
Canned milk, chew. Chocolate chips,
more chew, a lot more chew,
beef jerky,
chew,
chew.
I don't do chew myself, but if anyone needs any, wow, you were the store
and books. I had books sent to me.
Good.
I've seen Marines actually drop their can of chew. The lid pops off. It falls on the ground. I've seen them actually. Like, scoop it back up.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
Back in the can.
Oh, yeah.
Wall.
Believe me, if you're going to die from something, it's going to be something that's already in the air or on surfaces, anyways. You don't have to worry.
It's not going
to
be on your chew. Yeah.
Yeah. If there's something in that ship, you're already dead, anyways.
Well, I think that was actually the best thing about touring the Midway is we agreed that there was enough CLP and diesel fumes around that there was no surface that a coronavirus could survive on.
We walked up board and said, What's that? What are those smells? Is that diesel? And I said, that's CLP. I'd recognize that smell anywhere.
Yeah.
And CLP for the uninitiated is cleaner, lubricant, and protective. It's used on every gun in the military to protect it from rust, carbon, and coronavirus.
Okay.
Chase said he's finished editing the reviews and homebrew interview. He'll release the episode as soon as I finish recording the intro. That's just his 30-second reminder throughout the day that I haven't recorded the intro for it.
So for those uninitiated, Sorcerer Zero is here, you know, not of her own accord. We goaded her into coming back on the show today because she's getting ready to do a book. She's pushing the book. Pushing.
I have until April 1st to
not April Fool's Day, but April 1st.
April 1st to submit my fantasy novel to the editor. And I'm going to be cutting it really close. I may have to submit only half of the book and then finish the other half to give to him the next month.
That would make it a little easier.
Yeah. I'm coming down to the wire. Champion, and the name is definitely staying Champions of Floral.
I like that name.
Yeah, I do too. We're hopeful that there'll be a Diffelhelmen key pass somewhere in that novel.
I've been thinking about that all day today. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I think I actually may be able to sneak it in. I may be able to sneak it in. We'll see.
The geek references among geeks will buy you much play, you know. When
yes, anybody who's recognizing that in and tells me they recognize that when I'm out in public may earn themselves a free beer.
That's definitely and beer. Oh, beer.
Beer.
We didn't really talk about beer, but we beer. Oh my God. When Linda was here, there was much beer. We did a lot of beer.
Cool, beer's good.
We went to Stone on Kittner Boulevard.
Oh, good. Is that the original Stone?
No. It was just a tap room. They had some great beers on tap. We actually walked a mile and a half, almost 2 miles, to get some more beer over at what used to be Acoustic Ales, but is now Latchkey Brewing. And they are doing some fantastic IPAs. And what was the one Che had? He had the Doppelbach, right?
Doppelbachs are good. I like Doppelbach.
Oh. Yeah, I have one can of beer left. Aww. And Cybernaut, it's unsafe at any speed.
Oh yeah, I'm sorry about that. I wish I could have sent you back up. I didn't send you back up with any real good beers.
Well, that's because we drank them all.
We did. We in fact did drink all the good beers. Okay.
Stone was the beginning, and Stone had really great. Big beautiful Belgian with cherries at Stone Brewing.
That was great. That Belgian was fan-freaking-tastic.
Yeah. And then the little bar we sat at, they had a couple of good ones. You know, not spectacular, but good. Good that went with the food. And then going to the tasting bar for Ballast Point was really amazing.
Oh yeah. The thing that I point out to everybody is if you're going to go Ballast Point, go to a tasting room. If you can get to a tasting room, if you can get it on tap, get it on tap. It's 10 times better than what comes out of the bottle.
I don't think I've ever had them on tap before.
Oh, you know, it's true. It is true. It does taste better on draft.
I bet it does. I think everything tastes better on draft anyways.
There's some canned beers that I'm just like, oh, those are great as they are. But
a little time set aside really makes them nicer.
Yeah, and in the particular case of Ballast Point, something in their bottling process just makes the beer kind of a bit sad. Mm-hmm. Although there was no saving that Watermelon Dorado.
That was
bad on tap. I'm sure it's nasty in a can.
This is a public warning. If you're over 22, like from 21 to 22, you may actually enjoy Watermelon Dorado. If you're over the age of 22, you just leave that sucker alone. I don't know what you were thinking, Ballast Point, making that Watermelon Dorado, but whatever's in it, that is just nasty.
Ew.
Okay. It's like it starts out being a watermelon and just like goes like
stale Jolly Rancher.
Jolly Rancher, and then just goes sewer.
There was garbage in that beer,
Eye-wateringly bad. Point,
yeah.
But what makes that raspberry
Victory at Sea?
Victory at Sea on tap. Blew my mind. This is the thing they do with raspberry. Just all my entire mouth was just screaming in happiness. Like every cell on my tongue was having an orgasm at the same time.
And then the Indra Conundra. I think that's what it's called. I don't know. I always screw up the name.
Indra?
Yeah, it was the curry beer and curry coconut.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
It just sounds so nasty when you're like reading the description.
Curry stout. Yeah.
Yeah. And you're like curry coconut stout. And you're like, but man, what a wonderful beer. What a wonderful beer. What
yeah,
a complex,
just,
wonderful
just a
beer.
Hint of lime. Just yeah. The yeah. Hint of lime that brought it all together, and a little bit of chili,
Linda and Jay came up here with a little bit of clout because they handed the guy at the Ballast Point, they handed him their card, their podcast card. And got us some free shit. So.
Oh, yeah. Seriously, they'd, you know, just give it over beers and going, your money's no good for this one.
Yeah. You just enjoy this beer on us.
Great.
Yeah. Thank you. And it was great. We greatly appreciated it, even though we probably didn't need any more beer that night. And then we just came back to my house and drank even more beer.
Yeah.
So,
and had food.
And it well, and we yeah. well, we took that trip to the bottle shop. So
yep.
I have an awesome bottle shop, don't I, Linda?
You do. You have
someone can just now verify.
Yep. Absolutely fantastic. Just every single inch is packed with
great beer.
They have no space, not an inch of space left. Like, better be careful where you're walking.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
All right. Well, I'm thinking we should probably jump over to the next show, or we'll just talk about entertainment-y things. And Linda, I know you've got to bail out because you have to finish that book.
I do. I have 8,200 words, and I actually owe at least 12,000, if not 15,000 words tonight.
Well,
I may, if I get dinner done fast enough, I may come back and actually talk about, one or two things that I'll...
Ping me in chat if you actually make your word count so I can have a shot of Canadian Club. I now have in my own possession some circa 1980s Canadian Club from Scale from Linda to me with the actual the liquor stamp, the thing they used to put over the top of the bottles.
Yeah, it used to be on every bottle. It's like a little strip of colored paper.
Yeah.
That's stamped. You don't see them anymore.
Because they don't exist anymore. But the Canadian Club actually says 1980 on it, and I'm like, oh my God, I wasn't even legal to think to drink.
Yeah.
At that point, right? So.
Yep. Well, I'm gonna go grill my pork sirloin and smash my potatoes and maybe we'll have this unsafe at any speed.
Well, tell me how.
It's gonna be bad.
It's not gonna be bad.
We'll let you know how mediocre it is.
That is always my thing with that brewery. They just, the aroma is usually so great, but then the beer itself is just like, I can't fault them for that. They're making the beer they want to make, and I cannot fault any brewery for making the beer they want to make, because they're trying to do what they want to do. And, you know, if the public doesn't want to get on board, well, that's their problem.
Well, the whole trip was definitely worth it. Definitely worth all, every penny spent on it, every moment driving.
Wow. That was a lot of driving.
20 hours down, 24 hours up.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna, you know, PM you guys about 3 o'clock in the morning, but yeah, you know, getting up at that hour is like, it's sucky. You must have stopped somewhere on the way up.
We stopped for about an hour and a half so I could get a nap in, and it worked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great. Always be good to your drivers.
Yep. And now I'm gonna go eat.
All right. So for those of you out there who are trying to avoid the virus, avoid the virus. For those of you who are trying to get it, avoid the virus.
Mm-hmm. Share your toilet paper.